Hey, welcome back to Taking It Down. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. It's good to have you. Hope you enjoy it. We're the TV and streaming podcast and a part of the Alabama Takes family of podcasts. There are plenty to see and hear there. Before I get any deeper, let's hear from our friends over at Polyphonic Press.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Polyphonic Press. Along with my co-host and best friend, John Van Dyke, we are exploring classic albums completely at random. At the top of each show, we have no idea what album we're going to be listening to. We have the patented random album generator to give us an album. Sometimes it's an album we're very familiar with, and sometimes it's an artist we have never heard of. Either way, it gives us a chance to really listen to these classic releases, and gives us insights that we may never have thought of before.
For something to come out of them. Agreed. Maybe he needed the other Beatles in the room at that time.
Well, I think so, and I think if you watch that Peter Jackson documentary from a few years ago about the Let It Be sessions, I think, you know, it was kind of, the writing was on the wall. I mean, they were breaking up.
John Lennon didn't sign the papers to officially dissolve the Beatles until 1974.
So if this sounds interesting, be sure to follow Polyphonic Press on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and everywhere else podcasts are available. We upload every Tuesday morning, and we strongly encourage you to listen along with us. Cheers.
Yeah, I hope you're good. I'm great. The Alabama Take and I, being the editor-in-chief, have begun a new little endeavor. It's a newsletter. What you'll find with the newsletter is you get a little over the recap of some of the stuff that's going on in the site and the podcasts all in one spot. That might be helpful to you, especially if you're not on social media at all. This newsletter is really designed for that. Maybe we might inch away from social media here and there, especially some of the sites that we don't use as much. We are on Mastodon, but I mean, got to be honest, we rarely use it. So that the newsletter might be good if that's where you were getting your information, but there's more to the newsletter. There's thoughts, there's what we're watching. You get a little rambling, fun rambling, I hope, insightful rambling. Sign up for it. Where do you sign up? Here's the deal. You can go to our link tree and find it quickly there. You can go to the website and find it there. The best way to do it is probably go to thealabamatake.com/newsletter. Takes you right to it. If you forget that, click on subscribe. You get a list of our podcasts and a place to subscribe to those of your choice. Scroll all the way down and find the newsletter box that gets you signed up. Plus, if you haven't checked out the new site, you got to. It's looking great. It's running smoothly. Everything's been tweaked and updated, and we like it. You can. One of my favorite things is that you can send any podcast a message. You can message us and we can play it on this podcast and talk to you. Plus, the podcasts are easier to sort now than ever. The streamer that you would use on the site to play a podcast is really good, functional, user-friendly. Go check it out. I want to talk a little about something that's always been eating at me. You're not going to get any spoilers here at all. Not in the beginning. That's our biggest policy on this podcast lately. With this podcast, we do not get into spoilers until we get into the episodes more granularly. We want everyone to listen to see if they can find a show amongst so many that they might prefer. So we try to watch a few and tell you what we think. And if we really like it, then we'll probably come back to it week to week and spoil whatever episode it is. That brings me to the show Sugar on Apple TV Plus. Again, I'm not going to spoil anything, so don't worry. But there's been a bit of information that's in a few headlines that really takes away something from the show. I concede one of Matt Zoller-Seitz's points he makes often. A great show is a great show, and a great movie is a great movie. Whether you know any spoilers about it or not, it shouldn't hinder anything. If you know one or two things going in, that shouldn't hinder. Still, let me go into most things blind. I get the idea of stay off social media then. Come on. Seriously, that's the solution? Stay off social media? I run a website. That's going to be pretty hard for me to stay off social media. I'd love to stay off social media. I'd like to get off some of it. Other than having a very good record of some photos, I really would like to get off of it. If I want to know more about a show or a movie, I'll click on past the headline. I'll click on it. I'm speaking specifically here of Alan Sepinwall, but it happens to be on him. Stop putting big elements of your show in the headline. Stop it. It's why I do not follow him and a few other critics in social media anymore, despite the fact that they are reputable, extraordinary critics and writers. But that's been one of our mainstays here, and we're really pushing it, and we hope it works. We're putting a lot more determination into this idea of, like, we'll merely tell you whether we like the show enough to recommend it to you, give you some vague reasons why. If we discuss anything about it, we'll stack those recommendations up front, and then we'll get into each of those shows later. That's for you. I hope that you find it works. Let me know if you like that. We can change it. That's a simple change to make. Let us know. We won't reveal anything till later. In your podcast app, there are timestamps. In some podcast apps, and like on YouTube, you can click on the time and go straight to that segment. Use the transcript as well. I had my doubts about transcripts about podcasts. I didn't see the point quite. But now that I use them in Apple Podcasts, I got to be honest, I'm basic. That's the podcast app I use. I just love it. You can figure out exactly where you want to go, or if you miss something, you can search keywords. Love it. I recommend it if that's your thing. No spoilers here. I'm going to talk about the third episode of Sugar later in the podcast, though, with specifics. If you've seen it, join me there. Check your timestamps. I recommend this show a lot. I find it fascinating, but let's see if that changes this week. So let's get into this week's podcast.
An elevator take projection.
While it's on my mind, Adam's not with us this week. It's me and my buddy Donovan. Adam is legit. He has gone mainstream.
And we're praying for him.
Send prayers. Adam's been really busy playing music with Duquette Johnston. This week and last week, he was on the road. He was down in New Orleans. He and Duquette opened for Low one night in Birmingham. How about that?
Like, it's so cool that Adam just did this, because there's actually a big New Yorker profile that just came out on Alan Sparhawk.
Yes.
Talking about these shows that he's just been doing, and it's just like...
And he's releasing a new album, right?
Yes. Yeah, him and his son.
Yeah. And he opened for Adam and Duquette, and the rest of the guys playing, also opened for Loose Cattle Band, which is Michael Severus. By the way, Michael, if you're listening, hey.
And Mike, if you're listening, my dad really appreciated the shout out, because he did love Fringe.
That's amazing. Michael seems like a really dope guy. Man.
Can we all hang out together?
Yeah, I hope he is listening.
Sounds awesome. He sounds awesome.
He does.
And I mean that like legitimately. Like, he actually sounds like a really nice dude.
No, he does. So yeah, give him a follow on Instagram. He seems cool. Well, we'll give him a little shout. Yeah, you heard me in the cold open. Joining me now, you've heard him already. It's my friend, one of my great friends, and Connecticut Southerner in King Arthur's Trumpian regime. It's Mr. Donovan Reinwald.
Great to be talking to you, Blaine.
There he is. Donovan, neither you nor I have seen the newly released three episodes of Franklin.
Not yet.
We're shooting from the key on the cat here. How pumped are you, exactly?
Oh, man. Like, the more you learn about Ben Franklin, the more awesome he is. And, like, if the show gets, like, a tenth of how horny he was and how awesome he was in it, amazing. Like, and he did all kinds of great shit during the Revolutionary War. Like, when the U.S. invaded, or the colonies invaded Canada, and let's see, they took Montreal, and then they couldn't take Quebec. They sent Franklin to Montreal to, like, help administer stuff. Like, it's like, who, we're doing something insane. Who can we get? Franklin. He's old, he's horny, he wants to go to Canada. It's awesome.
This one is set in December of 1776.
Yeah.
Michael Douglas plays Ben Franklin. So if you want to cast a horny older guy, they nailed it.
I actually like Michael Douglas. I've seen him in some stuff I very much have enjoyed him in.
I don't know if I can get away from the Michael Douglasness of it with him as Franklin. Or is that going to be a perfect blend? I can't figure it out.
I think I know what you mean, right? Where it's almost like you see the actor too much. Like, mm-hmm. My thing that I keep popping back to every time is when, you know, in The Very Good, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, when the dad mm-hmm. comes home, right? And the dad opens the door and is like, "Hey, I'm home," and it's Bob
it's
Odenkirk.
Bob Odenkirk.
I'm just like, I can't unsee that.
It's like, really? Bob Odenkirk's the dad.
I mean, I want him to get roles, and he's not bad in it.
No,
he's like
not.
Every Mr. Show episode I've ever seen flashes through my brain in that moment.
Or even, you know, just Saul from Breaking Bad. Even if that's your reference
right,
point.
Right.
He's going to come in and swindle you. No, right. He's just a dad.
Which is not like fair to actors, but there are some actors I never feel that way about. Like I've been thinking about Jesse Plemons this week because he and his wife have that movie out, and he looks terrifying.
What movie? Wait, what?
Civil War.
Oh, they're in that.
Kristen Dunst is the main character. She's a journalist reporting on something, and then I don't think this is a spoiler. Because he's in the trailers. He has a cameo as either a militia member that stops.
Plemons.
And apparently he's terrifying. And maybe I am just in love with him, but I feel like he just disappears in an insane way into every role.
He's so good. He's just
really
watchable.
Good.
I don't know that I don't know if I'd agree with your assessment that he disappears. He's just watchable to me.
Yeah, I just think about, you know, he's done everything from, is it Doug in Breaking Bad? Is that his character's name?
Oh, God. What is his name in Breaking
Bad? Yeah, I'm completely blank. His Breaking Bad character to, you know, like the kind of like kind-hearted buffoon he was in the Love and Death with Elizabeth Olsen to the sort of terrifying next-door neighbor cop in Game Night. Like, he's great.
Yeah, and he's in so much more.
Oh, you know what? Somebody pointed this out about him.
He was in Fargo.
And I really, really, the best season of Fargo, too. The one with him and Kirsten Dunst. But somebody pointed out, too, that, like, he, as an actor, he doesn't seem to have a huge ego. Like, he just seems to, like, want to work with cool directors and be in cool movies instead of being a star. Mm-hmm. So, they're like, you know, he'll take the bit role in The Irishman, right, just to work with Scorsese.
Wow.
I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah. We are going to talk about that decisive 8th episode of Shogun in a few seconds. But we do say general things about shows, even if it's a show we've discussed in the past. Shogun, we believe, warrants a weekly talk. It's just a fun conversation.
It is.
But, Donovan, tell viewers something about Shogun and maybe even the 8th episode, The Abyss of Life, that will not ruin any of their viewing. No spoilers.
There's some Japanese people in it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Can you add more?
Okay, so there's some Japanese people at it. And then I don't know if you guys remember, but the protagonist of the show, John Blackthorne, he's an Englishman, and he wants his ship and his men.
Yeah, okay.
That pretty much sums it up, really.
We love this show. We love it. So, yeah, moving forward, that was just about all we really wanted to say that didn't involve spoilers that we haven't already said. You know, we love it. We recommend it.
I would give it a big thumbs up, and... Mm-hmm. To those of you who watched the first episode and were like, this might be a little too intense for me. It goes very, well, you know, they boil the guy alive and they kill the baby and all that.
Oh, that
right?
Kind of intensity?
Yeah, yeah. They take it's good, but they take the foot off the gas there a little bit.
A little. I thought you meant intense and keeping up with everything.
Oh, no, it's doing a fine job with that.
Some
people are like, I don't know, that looks a little bloody. It's not Red Wedding every single episode, right? There's a lot more going on.
So we are going to spoil the Abyss of Life, both the Shogun episode and our own existential
our own existence.
Yeah. I joked last week that we were riding the horse into Edo, but that's how this episode actually opens.
Yes. Literally riding horses into Edo.
Edo, which will become Tokyo.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Being unwise to the history of Japan, I didn't know that.
I mean, it's been around for a while. Things have more than one name, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's Torinaga's vast land, his fiefdom, often muddy.
At least in this episode, it was raining quite a bit.
Sure was. Matched the mood of the piece.
Oh, no, sorry. This may be like, I'm going too broad. But this episode was so frustrating. Like, I liked it, but it was definitely like, I think I talked last week about how, like, for better or for worse, I, the viewer, I'm on Torinaga's side. And this episode, you're just like, oh, do something! Which is perfect, right? Because that's everybody else in the episode is having, you know, it really puts you in there.
Yes.
And then, so this episode was such, like, the mud, the rain, it felt like a slog. And I mean that in the best way, just in the sense that I thought they did a really good job of conveying the emotion and the frustration. You know, it paid off at the end.
It felt like a slog purposefully.
Yeah. Not in, right. Like, not in that it was unenjoyable viewing.
Right.
But in the sense that it was doing a really good job of conveying the attitudes of a bunch of people who just can't believe what's happening to them.
Yeah. Visually, and the set being muddy. Yes. And then the rain of the visual fit perfectly. Torunaga's looking unwell.
He's got that cough.
So much so that he avoids his own son's funeral.
Yeah, he watches the cremation from the roof of, I'm going to assume, his palace or his residence. Mm-hmm. Although this is something I meant to look up. It looks like they're building the castle.
It did look like it was being built.
Uh-huh. And I was going to look up the history of that and completely forgot until this moment. So,
well, he'll get the 49 days of customary grievance that's allowed someone in this period of Japan before he must surrender to Ishido and in Osaka. Now, is it me? Are all these rules and customs really allowing for a man like Torunaga to work around some things? We've already seen it when he retired from the regents and forced their hand to have to figure out who's going to be a fifth regent. And we see he's getting a break for his mourning and the burial. Look, I'm no military genius by any stretch, but someone in Japan needs to step up and say, my guys, if we're sincere about this Torunaga beheading, maybe we need to play a bit fast and loose with the policy manual this week. Maybe we can forego the Title IX training and just shorten up the mourning time. Just an idea.
I think it's so good because, first off, yes. And I think the episode explicitly says, like, he can work with this.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, too, right? It's about your legitimacy, right? Like, if Ishido comes and beheads Torunaga, doesn't allow him to mourn, et cetera, he's undercutting his own legitimacy to rule because, you know, he's ruling a recently divided, or until very recently divided Japan, right? So a move he makes against Torunaga could unsettle his right to be on the Council of Regents and his right, you know, it could cause people to question. So, like, it's a balancing act, right? Like, if Ishido could have just killed Torunaga, he would have, right? But he has to play the game, so especially so that it doesn't seem like he's trying to usurp power from the
heir. Makes a lot of sense.
That's my interpretation. I mean, I may be completely wrong.
That's perfect. You don't leave a staff meeting of Torunaga's thinking, this could have been an email.
Oh, man. I mean, last week, you know, it was Torunaga's employee benefits program. This week, it's his fucking staff meetings. I mean, imagine, like, you're getting called in, you're debating policy, and then an old guy starts yelling, pulls out his knife, and cuts his guts out. You can't do that in an email. And there was no PowerPoint, too. He's a very effective communicator.
That's right.
Short, sweet. He doesn't need PowerPoint.
Yeah. Any surprise to you that Yabusheche, I'm just butchered the poor man's name, any surprise that he ranks deaths when it comes to dying? He's like, oh, no. That's better than this one.
Everything about, like, he's such a scout. I mean, as Torunaga himself said, right? He's like, they're both goshawks. They're completely predictable. Like, everything that he does in this show, you're like, of course that dude is doing that. ranking deaths. You know, trying to figure out how best to sell out his, like, sell out his side. Like, it's just, he's great.
Yeah.
Like, he starts cozying up with Blackthorn at the end of it. He's like, oh no, we're, you know, he's called him a dog before, but now he's like, oh no, we're allies now. It's just anything.
It is about time that the Anjin and so Yabusheji are friends.
They need to be pals and go on adventures, which could be happening.
It seems like it. They're on a ship together headed toward Osaka at the very end. The tea scene between Butaro and Markio is very delicate.
Yes.
Delicate from the point of view of a director handling how to set it, pace it, and their actions.
I agree. It was one of those moments that made me think, like, first off, the sets in the show are great, right? I mean, the setting establishes some of the mood, the feeling, right? The back and forth. You know, like, it's usually pretty good directing if you don't really notice it, if that makes sense. The back and forth between him and Marco. Yeah, it was very delicate, like you said. And it was like the emotion was, at least for me, I may be reading too much into this, but for me, it's like this dude's bearing his soul here, essentially.
Yes.
And so you're like, you know, that's a big thing for him. But also, this is the same guy who pretty viciously beat her a couple episodes ago, right? So there's that tension with him. And then there's her, what's behind the mask for her, right? And then she finally kind of lets it go and is just rips him apart. He's ready to die at this point.
It's great. You get her big reveal to him that her death wish was just to be out of his grasp.
It's probably about as bad a way as a little tea time could go, right? It's probably like the worst ending.
Fuck this. I'm going to Toranaga staff maybe.
I will kill myself.
Yeah.
Rather than hang out with your dumb ass.
Blackthorn fights one of his men who are now, to him, the barbarians.
Well, it's because he discovered bathing.
Exactly. Once you decide to bath.
Now all he sees is a dirty, degenerate Dutchman.
Who doesn't? That fight between him and that crewman is so pivotal because it puts him in such a limbo existence. And that not belonging anywhere, and he admits it to Yabusetche, is just tinged with sadness, really.
Did you ever read Ursula K. Le Guin's classic novel, The Left Hand of Darkness?
No.
So it's kind of reminded me of the ending of this. And I'll be brief because it probably means nothing to anyone but me. But it takes place on a planet where there are human beings, right? And there's a visitor from Earth. But the human beings, or he's like an ambassador from Earth. But the human beings on this planet do not have a fixed gender. They go between male and female, just depending on many things. So they'll procreate as males. They'll bear children as women. And at the end, and they see fixed gender as something very upsetting. And like wrong and unnatural. And at the end of the book, the folks from Earth come back to basically pick up the ambassador, and they seem strange to him, these people of fixed gender, after he's gone through these experiences. And it is that, like, that's got to be like the saddest place to be, right? Because like you're somewhat of a monster to the people you live amongst, and yet your own people now seem monstrous to you. You're in a nation of one right there.
Right. True loneliness.
Yeah.
Well, much like you, I was really hoping Blackthorn would punch the smarmy priest, Father Martin.
I actually kind of like him, and I like Torinaga's jokes with him. He's so good. Torinaga, like, really, if there's one thing we've learned from this episode, is that he's a prankster and he can play the long game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Who's that? Oh, those are your neighbors, the courtesans. Huh.
Toranaga says, "Don't speak Japanese to me."
That's a good moment too, where it's like he makes like everything go for Mariko, right? And the priest is just somewhat bewildered. I actually kind of like that priest. He's not as bad as the other ones. He seems a little bit more sincere, a little less ruthless, a little less bloodthirsty. His superiors seem a little bit more Game of Thronesy, I guess.
Oh. Lady Ochiba, did she hasten the nun's death? The former wife of the dead leader?
I don't know.
Huh.
I think so I was watching, thinking the exact thing, right? Like when she's like, "Here, will you take this medicine, right?" Like maybe? Like we've seen that Ochiba is pretty willing to act.
Yeah.
But did she need to? I don't know.
Yeah. It could have been a mercy killing even.
Yeah. She was clearly not well, right? Like, she just had a horrible stroke.
But this is also the lady who drugged Ochiba in order for her husband to rape her for an heir. Take it as you will, I suppose.
I don't know if anything at all will come of this, right? But, you know, she's talking to Ochiba as, like, he's our son. You know, like, yes, you bore him, but he's my son because I am the legitimate wife of the Taiko. And therefore, and I wonder, like, maybe she does want to get rid of some, like, who drugged her and everything, but she does have her quote-unquote reward, right? Which is that she's the mother of the heir.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's the sole mother of the heir. There is only her left. I don't know. That maybe, maybe not.
I think that they wanted it to be interpreted one way or the, you know.
Yeah.
Open to interpretation.
Yeah, definitely.
Got to ask a few questions as we wind it down. Was Toranaga just simply aware of his son's attack on his half-brother? Did he order it in hopes to sacrifice his son in a way?
So my thought is that it's a stroke of luck, right? And it like whatever he was playing, it fell into his lap, as we see at the end of the episode, right? Like he's going to take advantage, like he's taken advantage of two great sacrifices. One, probably, I think it's probably accidental.
Okay.
For the son. And then obviously for Buntaro's father, killing himself in the middle of the meeting like that.
Iromatsu.
Huge, thanks, could not think of his name. A huge, huge sacrifice.
Okay, so that was my next train of thought. How much of the plan did Hiromatsu know? Was he acting on a plan or just out of emotion? Did he know he was supposed to do this and maybe not know it was going to go this far?
I believe it was planned because Tornaga says basically he knew he needed to sell it to them.
Yes.
They had to truly believe. And I mean, that's a pretty good sell.
And the other indication is that Iromatsu tells the others, no, stop talking. It's me only, like as if to say, I can't let anything interrupt this.
Yes. And he stops Buntaro. And it is, I mean, like the overarching, it's good for one of like the overarching themes of the show, right? Which has been like, what is loyalty and what does it mean? Blackthorn believes that, at least with him and Toranaga, it's somewhat transactional, right? Like mm-hmm. he's done his part and Toranaga has done his part. And now they're done. And then someone, the gardener, who's executed for taking the, you know, the peasant off. This is a pheasant. Sorry, not peasant. This is a couple episodes back. Right. But like that kind of loyalty to like, I've served the town, but I've also done things correctly. Like that, like ennobles his life. And then there's Hiromatsu, who sees that, right. Like his life is almost kind of like meaningless if it's not serving his lord. It was intense. It was a good scene.
Yes.
It was very good and very shocking, I thought.
Yeah, I think we're to understand that he was in on it. I think the only thing maybe to question would be, was he supposed to follow through? Or, yeah, he was. That was the sacrifice. It was, you know, the total sacrifice of his life.
Yeah. I read it and watched it as, based on what Toranaga said, yeah, he knew what he was doing.
Okay.
You know, it's like Abraham Lincoln said, Blaine, it's the last full measure of devotion.
Life?
I don't remember. It's from the Gettysburg Address.
No, I meant sacrificing your life?
Yeah, sacrificing your life.
Yeah.
Or as the Bible put it, greater love has no man than to lay down a life for his friend.
And that's what Hiromatsu did.
Pretty intense.
And they go way
pretty
back.
Intense, pretty unbelievable scene, right? Because you are kind of like watching the whole, to go back to what I kind of said at the beginning, like watching this whole episode, you're kind of like, this can't be real, can it? Like, he's got to have a plan, right? And then like the answer is no until right at the end where you're like, maybe he really, like, I don't know what's gonna happen now. And then it's like, no, actually he does have a plan.
You knew the coughing and the sickness was fake.
Well, yes. I did know that.
I mean, he jumped up from one of his sitting positions pretty easily.
Yeah, he's not that sick.
No. If at all. The very drawn out and the way that it was filmed of the seppuku of Hiromatsu was so drawn out, to it milked of all the tension that it could. Mm-hmm. In a skilled way, not mm-hmm. Not in a way that belabored the point. I mean, you were on edge as a viewer.
I was.
Yeah.
And then even through like the act itself, you're just like, there's almost a like level of like, this can't be happening, right?
Yeah, you keep thinking somebody's going to stop this, or right. Toranaga's going to stop this.
Yeah, you're really playing chicken.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
The episode as a whole was good. The meeting is, for me, the standout moment, just because, you know, like, when is Toranaga going to say, okay, that's enough? And he never does.
Good thing Blackthorn wasn't at the meeting.
He would have been like, he can't kill himself, he needs his ship!
He probably would have approached Toranaga right after him and like, I know this is a bad time. Right?
But you're just giving up?
Can I have my shipping, my man? Just
this episode was actually pretty light on Blackthorn. I mean, we did have
The big moment where he's in limbo now.
Yep, that's big huge. Moment with him confronting the crew member. A couple other little, you know, moments with Mariko and some of the other, you know, going to Yabushigi. All that stuff. But, you know, they really weren't they're like, yeah, this is happening to set up what's going to happen. But it was really Toranaga's episode, I thought.
The priest gets him a little with the, are you going to go see your men dressed like that?
Yes.
It's just a little, oh man, I would have punched him.
That was great. Because it's like, he's like, I guess I will. Take off those skirts.
Yeah. I think I'm just super annoyed at how the priest shaved their head but leave the little ring around.
Oh, like it's tonsure, right? Isn't that what it's called?
You got me.
I think that's what it's called, tonsure. There's a reason for it. I can't remember.
Really? There's a practical reason?
No, like a religious reason. I don't know, practical.
Like the top of the head to get you closer to God or something kind of?
I honestly don't recall. I'll have to look that up.
Huh. All right.
I do like how this is just, you know, 21st century perspective, but you do have a little bit of like the English think that the Japanese are barbarous and the Portuguese think, you know, everyone thinks everyone else is a barbarian. But to me, the 21st century viewer, it's like you're all just wearing cool hats all the time. A cool hat for every different occasion.
What's to complain about?
Right.
Next week's episode is called Crimson Sky.
I have my hopes. We're getting close to the end here. I'm not ready to let this one go.
I'm still questioning whether or not they can pack it all in the last two episodes.
I don't know. We'll see. Endings are hard. You know, I do think there's a lot of shows. There are some shows that had such a bad ending in last season that it essentially broke the show. I'm looking at you, Game of Thrones. But then there are other shows, or even like miniseries, right? Like the first season of Hill House, I loved a lot. But the last 30 minutes, it did stick the ant landing. It didn't feel like it fit with the rest of it. But it's like, you know, okay, I'm weighing, you know, 9.5 hours of this is really good versus 30 minutes of that was all right. Ending
yeah.
hard.
This one has a book and a previous miniseries to figure out what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
You got to be more hopeful, I think, for this one.
And they've been pretty deft so far. I just love how, I think I said this last week too, but I just love the aesthetics of it are like, no, we're going to take big swings. We're going to have luscious costuming. Our sets are going to be great. We're just going to go big. And I'm cautiously optimistic for the last two episodes based on that.
Crimson Sky's got to be a visual masterpiece, you'd think.
I hope so. If they are doing that Game of Thrones thing, you know, where it's like the penultimate episode of the season was where you get something real good, and then the last episode is kind of wrap up and set up.
Sure,
could be that kind of episode.
I haven't seen anything on a second season. It is a one and done as far as the book goes. There's what could they do with the second season? I don't know yet. If that's even number one, it's not on the table as far as I know. And number two, I don't know what they even could do yet because of the last two episodes.
Yeah. And I'm not looking into it. I've never read the book, so I'm just like, I'll just let it.
Do you think you're going to read the book?
Probably not.
Yeah. Kind of got it now.
I mean, maybe, but probably not.
As Alabama fans, we're certainly looking forward to Crimson Sky. That's...
I'll bring my shaker. Every time someone gets beheaded, I'll whisper to myself, Roll Tide.
First down, Alabama.
First down. Someone gets an arrow right through the eye. First down.
And with that, let's take a break for station identification.
That's pretty good Eli Goal right there.
Wow. So I only have a few brief ideas about the Apple TV Plus show Sugar and its third episode that dropped Friday. It's called Shibuya Crossing. It's a Japanese term. It's the crossing there in Japan, in Tokyo, right? One thing this episode managed to do successfully is really leave me wanting more of these polyglots of John Sugar's party who are not who they say they are. Or at least they're more than what they say they are. So who are they? I gotta be honest, they're aliens, I guess, right? Spies? Alien spies? CIA seems too easy as Davey figured that out. The spoiled nutcase son of producer Bernie Siegel. Also, Ruby, who seemed to be John Sugar's handler in the first two episodes, now it looks more like she's commander, boss. Ruby's upstairs room looks way too much like a police station's questioning room. It does not look like a house at all. It looks like it could have been built with concrete or steel rather than just a house look. If they are aliens, though, That's a wild turn, no doubt. That's bold. I do hope it's something else. Ruby's line that we're just here to observe, her line about that to Sugar, it's just too easy to make. It's too obvious. That was one of the worst bits of dialogue the show's had so far. If you want to do a big surprise, I would think you'd put more effort in how you trickle out the clues. That one was just on the nose. It also would make it obvious that Stallings, this bad guy, this thug, is another alien. All that said, this is why I can't stand a headline that leads you in any sort of direction to recognize a surprise. See, I was looking for a surprise, and here it was. I had it figured out. I'm guessing I've got it figured out pretty easily. I think maybe I should give Alan Sepinwall a bit of a break. Maybe he gets off the hook here, because I think Apple had announced this show a couple of years ago as a sci-fi, and then it comes out as a detective noir, in a way. What a bummer. Alas, we'll see if there's any more to this. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I do not have the fourth episode. So we'll see. Anyway, that's it for this week. Follow the podcast in your favorite podcast app. If you need help with that, go to thealabamatake.com. Click on podcast. We're listed there. Click on subscribe at the top if you want to do that. And you can find any of our podcasts, and you can pick your favorite podcast app there. It's up to you. If you like YouTube, you can go there, subscribe to the Alabama Takes YouTube channel. Taking It Down on Video will be there this Wednesday, where Raz and I discuss the pilot of Twin Peaks way back when, 1990. If you like us, let us know. I'm not asking for a review. I don't think those do that much good. You can do that, for sure. Just let us know. Just email us. Hey, do the message thing on the website where you can leave a voice message. That'd be cool. That would be a lot of fun, actually. Give us some. Let's play around with that. I'll talk to everybody next week. Have a great week.